Hello, welcome back to a new episode of For the Love of Weather. This is the podcast where we explore the Earth's atmosphere and how we are all connected through the weather and climate. We are your hosts, Gemma and Aisling. We're both meteorologists and weather presenters and have been working in weather now for over 15 years. We are so happy to have you here on the podcast with us today. And as always, we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more and learn a little something about how the weather and climate can impact our daily lives. Hi, I'm Gemma.
Hi, I'm Aisling, and today we have Sarah Kent with us. Now, I only know Sarah as the meteorologist, but I have recently discovered there is many, many other colours to what you do. But quite interestingly, you live on a narrowboat, which is, I can't say I actually know anybody that lives on a narrowboat. That's pretty amazing. But she was definitely the most loveliest, friendliest voice on a call from the Met Office. Lives a little bit of an unusual life in the narrowboat, probably not to you, but to us, cruising around the UK. You also own Wild Soul Coaching. That's your business, helping women live extraordinary lives. But you've studied astrophysics. You're a meteorologist. You've traveled around the world. You served in the armed forces. You just happen to be an ultramarathon runner, beekeeper, microlight pilot. And you play the mandolin. And controversially, you like Marmite. Very welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you, Ash and Gemma. It's an absolute delight to be here. And thanks for that resume, because I'd forgotten about some of those things, like beekeeping, for instance. That's what happens when you have a full life.
So we always like to start our podcast by asking our guests, where did your love of weather come from? Where did that spark of joy originate?
Everything that I love doing is tied in with being outdoors and in nature. Always, as a kid, I can remember playing outdoors, climbing trees and being a general nuisance. As I got older and, your parents loosen the reins a little bit, I would be hiking and cycling in the wilderness if I could, and wherever I could find that in the UK. And of course, the weather is always a huge part of decision making when it comes out. And if it isn't a part of your decision making, you should probably rethink what you're doing if you're going out into the wilderness. But I didn't actually always want to be a meteorologist. I was just insanely curious about anything, and it was how does this stuff work? How does life work? How does the universe work? What makes it all tick? Is it some giant clockwork machine? That was the kind of stuff that was going in my head when I was a kid. So I actually went into astrophysics because I just wanted to know how stars worked, how the universe worked, and as a part of that, I did planetary atmospheres, and I thought, I hate fluid dynamics. I'm never going to do this for a living. But it got to the end of my degree and I thought, I really should think about what I'm going to do next. And so my career planning was just flicking through a magazine. I think it was Science. And I saw someone launching a Met balloon in Antarctica. And I thought, you can go and work in Antarctica? I mean, how cool, literally, would that be? And it was the Met Office. So I thought, right, righto. And I applied to join the Met Office, and really the rest is history. They wanted me to do research. I didn't want to live in Bracknell. I wanted to be somewhere remote and close to the wilderness. So I managed to get into forecasting. And the love of the weather, as you said, that has never left. Yes, I did have to do some fluid dynamics, but the weather is stunningly beautiful to be paid to go and look at the clouds at dawn and at sunrise is such a gift. I mean, I still do if I'm up that time of day, and because I'm not getting paid for it anymore. And there's weather everywhere. I've always loved travel. So it was that combination, I guess, of chunking down, how does the universe work, to how does our planet work? And what is the thing about living on this planet which really affects how I live from day to day? And that was the weather. And it still affects everything I do now.
I just resonate so much with what you're saying there, just that curiosity and the how and the why. And I love that, like, you went to do a degree in looking up and you ended up looking down. Like, essentially that's what you do as a meteorologist. You look down on the earth. But I just really, really get all that curiosity. And remarkably, all the things I listed in the introduction, they are all weather links, like the power of actually knowing and understanding the weather. Also, becoming a microlight pilot. I mean, you'd want to be really hot on those thermals. So you might not like fluid dynamics, but you trust it.
And crosswinds. Crosswinds, that's the thing. I used to fly one of these flex wing microlights, and for people who don't know, that looks like a hang glider, but you've got one of these little tricycle units hanging underneath it, all off one really big bolt, but it's just one bolt. But you haven't got a rudder, which means you have to land into wind, otherwise you just fall over basically at quite a high speed.
It's so... making me rethink the cross sections I used to do of airfields. You know, you'd have like rising thermals on them, just sort of like looking through to FEs, putting them on, but actually the reality of what you were doing.
Yes. And I first flew the microlight when I was on Anglesey, RAF Valley. And that's very, very close to the sea. And you always get a sea breeze when you're close to the sea. And if you're used to that, you'll know how the wind and the air changes. It gets much cooler. Sometimes it feels a bit fresher. You can smell the salt, but it's the wind direction change that's critical. So if you've taken off in one direction and a sea breeze comes in, you've got to rethink which direction you're going to land in. So that's just a really simple way that the weather affects flying.
So you've ended up, like, we're very quickly going to journey to, you're living on a narrow boat. First of all, explain to everyone what a narrow boat is.
It was a surprise to me too.
How did you get to that decision? So tell us that whole story. Tell us all about it.
So a narrow boat, and it's not a long boat. A long boat is a Viking thing. So a narrow boat is 6'10" or 7 foot wide at the absolute maximum. And it's because some of the canals in the UK, so there's no current in most of the canals, they were designed, the locks in them were designed for narrow boats, literally that width. Some of the busier canals, like the motorways, like the Grand Union Canal, they could take two narrow boats, which is why the locks are a little bit longer. My boat's 58 foot long. Living space wise, I've got 40 feet because I've got outdoor space in the bow, which is the front of the boat. And then I've got outside space on the deck at the back. It's powered by a diesel engine. So I've had to learn a lot about engine maintenance. But it is pretty much off grid in the summer. We don't get enough solar energy in the winter for that to actually work. But how I got here, I didn't know you could live on narrowboats. I thought they were like caravans. I thought you just went on holiday with them. I've never owned a TV, so I didn't appreciate all the narrowboat programs that are up. But it got to the point in my Met Office, my role as a meteorologist, where I just couldn't maintain the hours. I wasn't able to live how I wanted to when I was just exhausted from working really long shifts. Anyone who's worked shifts will know what that feels like. And so I just sat down and said, well, look, if I'm going to live a life that really nourishes me, what does that look like? And it was not working shifts for a start, but also living as close to nature as I could, living as sustainably as I could. So trying to minimize my carbon footprint, being really mindful about my impact on the local environment and in the bigger scheme of things too. And also to be able to work from wherever I am. And when I found out that you could live on a narrowboat, and of course, mobile internet is pretty good nowadays, I thought, why not? So I resigned and sold my house. And 2 years later, here I am on a narrowboat.
That's quite a short decision-making process time. So to get from A to B, that was quite quick, 2 years.
The key thing is that when you make a decision and you know that it's right for you. I mean, I knew this was right for me. The only thing left was, well, two things. There's courage and trust. And that's trust that you are making, that you're going to be okay, ultimately. Whatever you're deciding, you're going to be okay. And courage just to give it a go. I mean, life is so short. I found a wonderful quote by Maya Angelou this morning, which I did scribble down. It says, life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away. And I wasn't getting many of those magical moments when I was working 10 or 12 hour shifts. And I didn't want to end up old, which we hopefully would love to get old, but to end up asking, you know, nobody ever says, I wish I spent more days in the office. I didn't want to be that person. And if not now, when is another phrase. So, I mean, if it doesn't work out, I mean, the last 2 years have been great. If it doesn't work out, I'll do something else. It's fine.
I've done a narrowboat holiday before and it was the most fun. Like, we were really little. I remember going through all the locks. It was so enjoyable. And as you say, it's a really great way to be in nature. Like, you wake up every day, there's nature around you. You can hear the birds. And then you travel along the canals and you see different parts of the nature that you're traveling through. It's an absolutely wonderful way to holiday and to travel around. So yeah, I totally understand why you would want to live on a narrow boat for sure. How are some of the ways that you feel like you're living more sustainably now that you're living on the narrow boat?
There's the sheer practicalities that you've got limited resources. The water tank on this boat is 400 litres. I can make that last 1 month. So that's 100 litres a week. Now, if you have a bath, that's probably around 200, maybe 250 litres of water. If you flush your loo, that's possibly 6 litres of water. So everything on board is designed to make the most of what resources I have. In the summer, I've got solar panels on the roof and they charge the batteries, so I can speak to you two, for instance, over the internet. In the winter, for sure, I do have to either find a place in the marina and plug myself into shoreline power, so I've got an electric supply, or I'd be running my engine to charge the batteries. But I'm only running it for the absolute minimum time required. That's the thing. And because everything I use is coming from the battery bank, if I don't need to have any lights on, they're off. You can see behind me, they're off here. So it's about being really aware of what resources I am using, where are they coming from, what kind of impact are they having? And sure, I mean, I will be leaving some kind of carbon footprint for sure. We all do. But it's what can I do to minimize that ultimately? And that to me is about really respecting life. You know, we are part of this bigger thing. I think the human beings tend to have gotten their place in things, but we are part of this miraculous network of life. We are part of the ecosystem, and it's really easy to forget that. And particularly if you are living in a city and you're just surrounded by concrete. But you know, all you need to do is to walk outside, and if you've forgotten your umbrella and it's raining, that ecosystem, you're going to remember that you are a part of this bigger thing. And ultimately, it's how can we live lives that, say, people 7 generations hence are going to thank us for? That's a good question. Oh, it's a question I like to keep in mind.
God, that really like just got my little heart there. That was like, that's pretty profound, isn't it? You know, when you think about it that way. I love as well how you're talking about numbers. I think if there was more numbers floating around like that, so it's 6 litres of water to flush a toilet, 200 litres of water for a bath. I didn't know that. I think if there was like a consciousness of that somehow, I don't know, just more freely in our day-to-day chat, you know. I'm a big believer in, you know, you talk about carbon footprint as well. I think numbers are very powerful if you can understand, well, on average I should have 10 a day, but I've used 11. I don't know, you know, there's something quite powerful in the numbers you're saying.
They can also be quite scary, because it's like, how can I make any difference at all? You know, if I flush my loo once less today, or if I shower instead of bathing, what difference is that going to make? And the answer is that individually, tiny, but not insignificant. And this is the key. And is that together, cumulatively, yes, we can start making a difference. And it's about owning our responsibility, because we are part of something bigger. And just to have some respect for being part of that bigger thing, which, I mean, I call life, but whatever you want to call it.
Do you find that there's a nice community feel amongst people that are on narrow boats as you're traveling around? But is there like a nice community like spirit as you travel through?
It swings around about. So the easy answer would be say, of course, yes, there is. Because the people who live on narrow boats tend to be, I'm reluctant to use the term misfits, but they're extremely independent. They're practical, they're pragmatic. And there is a kind of canal karma, you know, what you put out, you'll get back. So if you help somebody else, the odds are when you're in a bit of a pickle, because things break, let's face it, someone is likely to be able to help you out as well. But it's like anywhere. If you're working in an office, there's bound to be someone you wouldn't choose to have a cup of coffee with, put it like that. And it's exactly the same in the canal community. You know, the vast majority of people are really kind and generous and are very, very willing to help. There's not many female boaters that single hand. It's just me on the boat. So you can get a lot of unwanted offers for help sometimes, and when you don't actually need it, because I love trying to work something out. I don't need to be told how to do something straight away. I'd rather ask around and work something else myself. So, but I haven't had any bad experiences with any of the boaters that I've met where I've been moored up, and I get to moor up in some pretty remote locations. And sometimes it is nice to have a boat right next to you. There's a little bit of security in that, but you never know who they are. And every boat has got a story to tell. I mean, every human has a story, ultimately, if we take time to be curious and ask a few questions. But I love hearing how other people got into boating too, and why they're still doing it.
I'm like, I love the idea, Sarah, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I have it. I mean, maybe I would, you know. The idea of things sometimes can be more difficult than actually doing it, but I really do admire you for what you're doing. I also just really admire your perhaps envious of your just awareness of your footprint, you know. It's really interesting. So how long have you been on the narrowboat now?
It'll be 2 years next week. I've got a boat birthday coming up next week.
Is that a thing? Do you celebrate both birthdays?
Well, I do. Well, the first time she went in the water, I gave her a little bit of rum as a congratulations. And it's become last year I did the same. So, yeah, so it's on the 22nd. That's when she'll have a nip of rum and I will just say thank you, because ultimately this is my home. And when your home can sink, you look after it in a very different way to a house.
That's actually quite a profound thought as well, isn't it? If you know, that would be everything. You would lose everything if it went. What have you, or have you noticed any, I guess, we'll start off with positive. Have you noticed any positive changes on the waterways in the short 2 years you've been boating? So that's like two seasons, isn't it? I would akin it to meteorology, where if you've had 2 years under your belt, you've seen everything twice, and you're probably starting to, like, you know, come to terms with patterns, you know.
So focusing on boats, people are aware, yes, it's diesel engines. And some of these diesel engines are quite old, ultimately. And as battery technology is improving, there is a move towards more electric powered boats. Most electric boats do have a generator in, because in the winter, the sun in the UK is simply not high enough. You can have as many solar panels as you like on your boat roof, and it won't be quite enough in, say, December and January to fulfill your energy needs. But there are more of these electric boats on the canals. Not many, but it's a trend. So that's good to see. It's, you know, it's reducing the impact that boats make as well. But when it comes to the canal network, I mean, it's a beautiful relic of our industrial history. And it's one of those things which is not getting as much funding as it needs to maintain it as a working system. And obviously, as a boater, I'm biased. I want to see a working canal system that I can navigate around. In the bigger scheme of things, it may well be that it's conserved so people can just visit it and see how it used to be like, as opposed to it being maintained as a navigable network. I don't know. It's, where do you spend the money when the country's already in debt, ultimately?
I hadn't really thought about that. Like seeing it like a road network or your road tax or whatever, that they're maintained and kept clean and open. That's a whole other podcast.
It is, ultimately, yeah.
Yeah, for the funding for that. It's really interesting. Do you see yourself on the boat in the next 2 years? Are you someone who can, like, you know, I tend to go in like 2 year chunks. I'm like, you know.
Well, I asked that question. So for me, boating was the answer. But the question was, what kind of a life is a life which nourishes me? If everyone listening to this writes that question down and then just journals on it, what kind of a life is a life which nourishes me? What would bring you energy each day? What would have you waking up feeling, I'm really looking forward to today? Just journal on that and see what comes up. For me, the word narrowboat wasn't on that list. But living on a narrowboat gives me most of the things that were on my list. Not all of it. But so as long as living like this is still the biggest answer, yes, to that question I asked, for sure, I will carry on living like this. And I can make a positive difference when I'm doing it, because with the coaching that I do now. So that is also a part. I've always wanted to make a positive difference. But the answer to that question is going to be something different for every single person listening. I can't tell people what to do. I never tell people what to do when I coach them. But I can ask questions that will help you discover the life that would really light you up from the inside out and help you to create something really positive that you, again, that maybe not just your children, but maybe your children's children, 7 generations hence, that people might thank you for.
This really left me like feeling thoughtful. I'm trying to fill in the silence. I'm like, I just want to
I'm
sit
really
and
sitting here thinking
yeah,
about
I
it all
really
now.
want
Yeah,
to
I'm really
just do it.
thinking.
And I'm, do you know what, Gemma? I was thinking the same of you because you're normally like, you know, I think you've just left us both like very thoughtful.
You obviously, you've worked in weather and you're living on a narrowboat. Like, how do you find that the weather impacts where you are? Because you're on the water, you're exposed to the elements in a way. Like, what is some of the worst weather that you've experienced since you've been on the narrowboat?
Oh, there's different kinds of worst because it always depends, doesn't it? It's like rain is terrible, but if you've got waterproofs and umbrella, well, you know. So what makes moving a narrowboat really tricky is when it's windy, because a narrowboat doesn't have a keel. You've just got a rudder at the back end. And if it's windy, you'll end up crabbing, literally going sideways down a canal. And sure, you can manage that. But when you want to moor up, so my boat weighs about 17 tons. If the wind is pushing my boat away from the towpath, I've got to slow my boat down to almost a stop, swing the end, the stern where I'm standing, into the bank so it's close enough that I can hop off holding a rope. And all the time the wind is going, nope, you're not going to have that. And it'll be trying to push the boat away from the bank. I need to be able to pull my boat in so I can hammer a mooring pin in and tie it up, and then I can moor it up properly. There are some days where the wind is going to win ultimately, and those are days when it's better just not to move your boat. So windy weather makes it tricky mooring up, and it could be just mooring up to go through a lock. It's not mooring up at the end of your day, it's mooring up as part of moving your boat logistically. And also, if you're maneuvering in a tricky space like in a marina where there's lots of other boats and they're not all steel like narrowboats, some of them are made of fiberglass. If you accidentally touch one of those with a steel narrowboat, that's not good. And the wind doesn't help you maneuver with any degree of finesse if you're in a small space. So that's the biggest thing that concerns me is the wind. And of course, in winter, the wind can take trees down. So you don't want to moor underneath a tree in the winter if it's going to be windy. So I'm always keeping an eye on the weather in that respect. The other thing, quite simply, if I'm out on the canal in the winter, is it going to freeze? And sure, the canals do freeze over. You do not want to move your boat through ice because, for a start, it will take the boat's hull is protected with paint. It will take the paint off where that ice is on the edge of the boat. You could also push those big bits of ice. And when it's thick, it looks like crazy paving slabs. It's really chunky stuff. You could push that into one of these fiberglass boats and you could damage the hull of that boat. So if you're iced in, you're iced in. Best thing to do is stay put. And that's when it's critical to know how long is your water going to last? This is why I know how long my water can last. This is the thing. Or if you need to go and get water, how far do you need to walk? If you need to go and get food, how far is that going to be? So always, 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 the weather is still a part of the equation of living on this boat.
I really quite enjoy that level of mindfulness. That's like, you know, if your mind, if my mind is constantly busy with stuff, but I'd rather it was busy with that, you know, day to day stuff than all the other stuff. And I think if you are busy with that type of stuff, it probably it's it for me. That would be a nice way, you know, to be like thinking like I'm a little planner at heart, but life gets in the way of it, if you know what I mean. It's really interesting. It's so interesting. And listening to you talking, Sarah, you're clearly like the philosopher, like your science, and then your view on life is it probably is summed up as quite philosophical. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about how you then started this business and when you started it and what you do with it?
Well, I qualified as a coach probably about 15 years ago now, quite a long time ago, but I was never able to bring it into my work as a meteorologist. It's something I did on the side. And then, of course, I didn't have enough energy around shifts to even to offer it. And it's really about how, and I work with women in particular, how women can create a positive legacy with their lives, whatever that looks like for that woman. I can't tell you, oh, you need to live on a narrowboat, for instance. That's perfect. Because that's it works for me, but it's going to be different for everybody. So I call what I do wild soul coaching. because none of us were born tame. We all came with dreams. As a kid, we knew what things lit us up and how we could best express our gifts and talents into the world. And then we get caught up in the shoulds of society. We're told this is what success looks like. There was the old thing with 2.3 kids was the average. I don't want to have 2.3 kids. I mean, some people might. I don't particularly want to have a house and a mortgage and a loan on the car and be tied into working until I'm, God, what is it now, 68? And then you might claim a pension and get to enjoy yourself if you've got your health. But for some people, that might be okay. But for some people, it's not. Some people have built brilliant careers, but are really profoundly unhappy and unfulfilled with their lives. And it's how can they get back to what's most important to them so they can start actually creating a positive difference in their lives? Because it always ripples out. Remember, I said at the beginning, we're part of an ecosystem. And one positive change, if you're creating a positive legacy with your life, that is going to ripple out in ways that we never know. We never know the difference we make. But if you're trying to create a positive difference, there will be that positive ripple. And so I help women create those positive ripples with their lives.
That's lovely. I'm just imagining all these positive ripples like going out everywhere now. And I'm thinking, how can I impart some positive ripples in what I do as well?
Literally thinking the same
thing. Yeah, I'm just thinking all these little ripples floating around everywhere. Yeah.
And I'm always saying about my boys as well, you know, they're watching me. They're watching me. They're watching my behaviour, my language. And they're going to learn the most from me.
And this is where we can get a little bit nerdy, because you know ocean waves.
Frosby waves is what I was thinking.
Well, it's not just that. Every now and again in the ocean, when the ocean swell and the waves that are there, all those ripples, whether it's caused by the wind or ocean currents, every now and again they'll meet and something magic happens. And unless you're a ship in the way, you get one of these enormous waves. I've forgotten the proper term for them, but you get one of these. Oh my goodness.
Like a freak wave.
Yes. And it can be in the middle of the ocean. So positive ripples, you only have to create a small positive ripple with your life. We don't know what other ripples it's going to meet up with. And you could, if it's a positive ripple, imagine being part of a freak positive wave somewhere in the world. So every one of us can make a difference. It's just asking ourselves, how can I bring my gifts and talents into the world and in what I do? And that fundamentally is through a life which nourishes you, because you know intrinsically what is good for you.
Yeah, you do. I always, but that for me, that comes down to kindness. Always start with kindness. So even if you're frustrated or annoyed by something, always just take a step back and be like, right, what were the intentions here? They would never have been for it to be annoying or for it to be a problem. Like, and you know, your intentions are always kind, you know, and kind. Anyway, let's move on. Gemma, do you want to do the get to know me round?
Okay, so we're going to move on to the get to know me round. Some of them are weather related, but then some of them are just totally random. So the only two weather related ones are at the start. So the first one, which you will be very attuned to the seasons living on a narrowboat, but what is your favourite season?
Oh, it depends. So when it's autumn, that's my favourite season, because the hedgerows, the hedgerows are full of berries, there's apples, there's mushrooms growing in the fields. The sunrise and sunset suddenly become to be at civilised times of day, and I can appreciate them instead of having to get up at hideous o'clock in the morning to actually watch them. So when it's autumn, autumn is definitely my favourite season. However, at the end of the winter, it's spring. I want to see more sunshine. I want to see a little bit of green showing on the hedgerows. So I'm sorry, it depends. So when it's spring, spring is definitely my favourite season. But when it's autumn, no, autumn, definitely my favourite season.
I feel like I'm the same. Like, if you were to ask me, I'd say my favourite season was autumn. But I have the same relationship with the seasons as well. When I'm moving into spring, that's my favourite season. But then when we're moving into autumn, I'm like, oh, this is my favourite season. So I totally get where you're coming from there.
Ash is convinced.
Fickle season pickers. No. Spring all the way.
What is your favourite type of cloud?
Oh, see, I have a list. I was going Kelvin Helmholtz. They're really sexy wave clouds. You know what? I saw some about 2 months ago and I thought, oh my God, look at those. And I thought, get a photo. And by the time I got my phone out, they'd gone. I thought, oh. So that's on the list. And I thought, nacreous clouds are really pretty. iridescent clouds. Now you can see those in the day. They're awesome and very distracting if you're driving. I love the roll clouds you get in front of supercells because that's a bit Steven Spielbergish because you're going, oh, maybe I need to hide.
Yeah,
So,
that and a shelf cloud.
yes. So I reckon actually I'm going to go for iridescent clouds.
If you had to choose, would you prefer the beach or the mountains?
Mountains. There's far too many people at the beach. I would rather go somewhere where I'm on my own, where there's just wilderness and sky and ultimately the weather, let's face it. So mountains, mountains every day.
And would you prefer a sunset or a sunrise?
Sunrise, because there's no one else up.
Unless you're a shift worker and then you're
Well,
awake on your night shift.
yeah.
If you were a fruit or vegetable, what would you be?
Oh, see, you said vegetable. I was thinking about just fruit, but if it's a vegetable, I'd like to be ginger because it looks, if you look at a bit of ginger root, it looks quite unassuming, but actually, it can blow your socks off if you eat some fresh.
I
No one's
just
ever said that before.
No. And also, I just love how people like come up with an answer, you know?
If you could invite one person to dinner, and it can be anybody at all from any historical time frame, or it can even be a fictional character, who would you invite?
Oh no, you said fictional. You know what? I was going to go Ernest Shackleton
Oh,
because
yeah.
there's so many questions I'd like to ask. But now you've said fictional.
You can have a big dinner, a big dinner.
Okay, let's have Ernest Shackleton on my left. I want to have Gandalf. Definitely Gandalf. Yeah.
Just those two.
Well, I mean, that'll do for starters.
Okay. And cycle in somebody through for the main and then the dessert and the tea and the coffee.
And finally, what's the one thing that you wish everybody knew about life? That's the big question. But what's the one thing you wish everyone knew about life?
The one thing that I wish everyone appreciated about life is that time is the most precious thing you have. And so often we think about spending time. Try rephrasing that and thinking, how am I giving my time today? Are you giving your time away? Are you giving it to the people you love? Are you giving it to something that really lights you up and which is going to create one of those positive ripples? So don't put things off tomorrow. We all know tomorrow is never a given, but ultimately, how are you giving your time? Because time is a finite resource.
Me and Gemma are having a little coaching session here by accident.
There's so many moments through this podcast where I've been like,
It's
wow, like
brilliant.
that's really got
Seriously,
me thinking. Yeah.
it's not often you get me and Gemma having a little silence after we ask a question. We're both like, what?
Just
That's really lovely.
every there's
Lovely.
been so many different moments in this podcast where it's really, well, I can only talk for me, but I can imagine that Ash has been the same, where it's really got us thinking about things in a totally different way. So yeah, thank you.
It's been a real delight, and it's been lovely to revisit so many of the things about weather and actually and how what an important vein it has been throughout all of my life.
And still now on the narrowboat, when you're talking about the wind, I can imagine the boat being blown away and you having to try and put it back in. So now, even now, the weather still plays a role where you're in how you live on the
All
narrowboat
the
as
time.
well.
One of the nicest things to wake up to is the sound of rain on the roof. My roof doesn't have any leaks, so I can appreciate it without one. But the sound of rain on the roof is such an amazing white noise sound. If you wake up, you can fall asleep again really easily.
Sarah, thank you so much for giving us your time. It is precious and we very much value it. So thank you. Hopefully we can, emanate some of those positive ripples and get some more going forward from today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, both of you.
If you have enjoyed this podcast, we would love it if you subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast. It really helps us to reach more people if you do that. So we would be so grateful if you could do that for us, please. If you would like to join us on Instagram, we are For the Love of Weather. On X, we are the number four Love of Weather. And Sarah, if people want to follow you and learn a little bit more about your business, where can they find you?
SarahLKent.com is the website. You can find me on LinkedIn as Sarah L. Kent. And funny old thing, I'm on Facebook as Sarah L. Kent too.
Brilliant. And we just hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more.
Thanks for listening. Bye.